Okay, so I'm just going to try and do this live. I have got Dr. Mandy Linehart here with me, and we just thought we'd have a little chat together about menopause, perimenopause, and try and do a little bit of myth busting. So we're trying not to get too close together. Both of us have had two jabs, so we're feeling confident. But that's why we're a little bit further apart. So welcome.
Thank you, Linda, for having me and for inviting me.
Yes, nice to see you too. So could I ask you just a few questions? Because you're a doctor who specializes in hormones, and I love that you take such a holistic approach to women's health and, you know, really do treat all of your patients, your clients, as absolute individuals, which we all are. I thought maybe if I could just fire you some quite sort of general questions.
Yes, sure.
And then if there's anything that you think you'd love all women to know, then please just feel free to share that sort of thing.
Yes.
So just starting off, I had one question come through about HRT and whether it actually, if you take HRT, whether you are just delaying going through menopause. And I mean, I know the answer to this, but I thought it would be really good for a doctor to answer that one.
Yes, well, that's just a common question I get all the time. So the way what helps us to understand what menopause actually is, so there is, from age 40 onwards, your ovaries are not working as efficiently as they used to. So they are still working, they're still making, in a healthy woman, some estrogens and progesterone, but you're having what we call anovulatory cycles with fluctuation and so on. And that can go on for 10 years. And then age 51, on average, women in the UK stop having periods. That means if that goes on for 12 months, you're then menopausal. So 12 months, no periods over the age of 50 means you're menopausal. So let's say you start HRT when you're 49, because you've had symptoms and you're not feeling well, you're not sleeping, hot flushes, or your mood is low and you're not feeling well. And your periods, let's say your periods stop when you're 50 and you carry on with HRT until you're 59. It doesn't mean that you have to go through the menopause transition again, because we would have expected you to be menopausal regardless whether you go on HRT or not. So the menopause underneath, behind the scene, will happen anyway, regardless whether you go on HRT or not. When you decide or make a decision for whatever reason to come off HRT when you're 55 or 60 or whatever age, for whatever reason, the advice would be to not go cold turkey, to not stop your HRT abruptly unless you've got a good medical reason to do so, like breast cancer, for example. But what you would do is you would taper it down very slowly, reduce the dose very slowly over several weeks, and then stop. And what will happen is, at that time, you will not have to go through the same symptoms again that you had experienced, let's say, 10 years earlier when you started HRT. But you may feel perfectly fine. You may have no withdrawal symptoms, no problems at all. But considering that you had taken hormones that were replacing your hormones that you were previously making yourself, you will probably notice some withdrawal of these hormones. So you may find that some symptoms come back, that you are feeling less energetic, maybe your sleep isn't as good anymore. So, but the symptoms will be different because you are in a completely different stage of your life. You are not where you were when you were 49 when you started HRT. So this is a myth, because HRT will not stop you from becoming menopausal. It will treat your symptoms. And if you come off at a different time from when you started, so 10 years later, you will be considered menopausal anyway, and the HRT will not change that. But yes, there are some symptoms which you will experience when you stop HRT, which are more to do with the withdrawal of the hormones rather than what is happening in your body. Whereas if you did not go on HRT, the symptoms you then experience are just the natural symptoms that are in keeping with your ovaries not working anymore and stopping functioning. And that is the difference. So the initial symptoms are basically to do with your own physical functions not working anymore, your ovaries stopping, and the withdrawal from the HRT is purely to do with the withdrawal of the medication, which many women get used to it, and they just, once they've taken the HRT away, they will either feel well or they will still have symptoms. But these symptoms would be symptoms that you would experience anyway even if you had never gone on HRT. So that's the difference.
Yes, I always recognized it or thought of it as you're going through perimenopause, so up to say the average is 51, like you said.
Yeah.
Your estrogen, your progesterone's dropped down, your estrogen is slowly fluctuating and dropping down as the ovaries are shutting up shop. And then once you stop producing that estrogen and progesterone and a bit of testosterone, your body is going to potentially suffer a bit if you don't have those hormones. They are very essential hormones to so many, you know, clarity of thoughts, of mind, moods, potentially our sleeping patterns. But after menopause, naturally, we tend to be able to operate at a lower level of hormones naturally. But if you've been taking HRT and you've been not suffering from various symptoms that you might do if you don't have estrogen in your system anymore, and then you stop HRT and your estrogen drops down and your progesterone drops down, then you're going to be postmenopausal, so already naturally depleted of these hormones. And then you've also taken away your HRT, so potentially vaginal dryness might return, incontinence issues might get worse.
Yeah, you will probably experience the very same symptoms that you would have felt anyway if you had never gone on HRT. So you would have the same symptoms like any other woman who would be like you without
that HRT.
Yeah. But it doesn't mean that you have to go through the whole changing of the fluctuations.
Well, you miss the fluctuations.
Yes,
they've gone. Right. Now it's just kind of almost
flat. It's just an adjustment rather than a change. It's more an adjustment to the lack of what you've previously supplemented.
Brilliant. No, thank you. That's good. That's clear. You mentioned breast cancer. Could we jump to that? So one question that came through is a woman who had kind of pre-breast cancer. So it's a slight changes in the mammary glands, isn't it? And could you talk us through the current thoughts on transdermal? So it's molecularly the same structure of hormones that we produce ourselves that tends to be prescribed these days. Could you talk us through what the latest info is on people who have had pre-breast cancer or even breast cancer and HRT?
So the estrogen component in most forms of HRT, not in all, but so there's equine HRT, which is obviously animal derived, which is something we are slowly seeing phased out and which shouldn't be used. But saying that, some women still feel well on that. So we have what we call body identical hormones now, which are the same molecular structure as our own body would have made. And they include progesterone and estrogen, which are the most frequently given hormones as a replacement, and also testosterone. But in terms of breast cancer, it doesn't really matter what form of HRT it is, whether it is or what form of estrogen it is, whether it is an oral tablet or transdermal. It's more the fact that you have estrogen in the system, which could affect existing breast cancer. Now, when it comes to long-term risk and developing breast cancer, if you start off not having breast cancer, then we do know that the body identical forms of HRT, so the body identical estrogen and micronized progesterone, have the lowest risk of getting breast cancer in the future when you consider starting HRT. So there is no increased risk for the first 5 years if you use these products compared to, let's say, synthetic progestins. Mm-hmm. So there's the transdermal route only refers to a smaller or no increased risk of blood clots, but it has nothing to do with the cancer. It's the progesterone, the progestin, and the combined form of HRT that is associated with the increased cancer risk. And in this case, the synthetic man-made molecules that are also called progestins rather than progesterone, they have an increased risk of breast cancer. They add 4 extra women in 1,000 or 23 women over 5 years. So these are associated with an increased risk. It's not the estrogen, and it's not dependent on the form. So neither oral nor transdermal estrogen increase breast cancer risk. It is the progestogen or progestin that does that. And again, but the best form with the lowest risk is micronized progesterone, which we call body identical.
So that in the UK is the Utrogestin.
It's called Utrogestin.
Yeah.
And it should be taken either orally or vaginally. So the route doesn't matter with regards to breast cancer. The breast cancer risk is not determined by the route of your HRT, more to do with the molecular structure that it has.
So basically, so, is it the synthetic stuff, or is it the new stuff, which is the micronized progesterone, rather than progestogen?
Exactly. Yeah.
And that is the molecularly exactly the same as what we produce ourselves.
Okay. And it fits in your cells like a key and a lock, which means that your body, when you take this, will not identify it as foreign, in which case it also does cause less, and this is very simplistic, fewer mutations, fewer changes in a cellular level. So we think that because you're replacing the same hormone and just topping it up, your body will just take it on board, utilize it instead of interfering with the physical function, if that makes sense. Whereas this synthetic progestins that we have very, very frequently in the pill, for example, they actually can lead to mutations long term. Mm.
It is crazy that so many women, you know, including myself, go on the pill without thinking twice about it, because we're like, oh, well, yeah, we don't want to get pregnant. And we literally don't even think about the big blood clot risk or the cancer risk or anything like that. And yet, when it comes to bringing our hormones back up to a level where we can function through life well, and with the safety profile of modern HRT, we're still given this blanket advice, don't, it's A, going to cause cancer, or B, you're going to get blood clots by many doctors. So just it's just interesting. I find it really frustrating, actually, but interesting. What about if you have had a precursor to cancer, your breast cancer, or you've had breast cancer, now it's treated, now it's fine, you're healthy. What would you say to people who maybe have been told no HRT blanket, but people who are really suffering? Maybe could you address it in two ways? One is really suffering with pelvic issues, so incontinence issues, and then B, suffering with maybe insomnia, hot flushes, mood swings, that kind of
thing. Yeah, so breast cancer. So there is one form of it isn't proper breast cancer, but it's a precursor. It's called DCIS, ductal carcinoma in situ, which is a very, very early form of cell changes within the breast. And it is very localized, and it can be usually fully removed. And these women tend to be cured afterwards, which means that they do not need adjuvant treatment like chemotherapy, radiotherapy, or tamoxifen or aromatase inhibitors. So these women are in a good place. And most of the time, if you speak to the breast surgeon or the oncologist, they will say, yes, these women, if they have terrible menopausal symptoms, hot flushes, can't sleep, feel their quality of life is very diminished, they can take HRT, they can take, if they need estrogen, also if they need a progesterone because they have a womb, they can take that, and they can also take estrogen. And they should not have an increased risk of a recurrence, but obviously they still have a risk of breast cancer like any other woman has.
So it'd be like any other woman as opposed to more of a risk. Yes.
And they should probably have annual mammograms. They should still be followed up and seen in the breast clinic on a regular basis. They should
be probably be honest.
One would hope so, but the follow-ups aren't always adequate because of the way the NHS is obviously struggling to fit women in. It's not always the perfect kind of follow-up. Sometimes they're discharged and they don't see anyone.
It's interesting, you just said if you're really suffering. So if I had just had, you know, if I'd had breast cancer and, you know, maybe 5-10 years ago, and I was now suffering with insomnia and things, I would probably listen to you and think, God, I'm not that bad. My life is, you know, I don't feel like I can work so much anymore, or I'm not feeling like I can go and see my friends and things, but I'm not really, you know, do you need to be suffering in order
The reason is that when doctors prescribe a licensed medication, they need to have a good reason. They need to, if they are taken to court, they need to justify, why am I giving this woman medication? They need to have a reason to be prescribing this. And if the woman has no increased risk factors, she has no osteoporosis, she sleeps well, her mood is well, she has no other discernible symptoms that affect her quality of life, then we would not necessarily be able to justify giving her HRT. Now, this is obviously quite rare. So there are about 20% of women who generally have a very easy menopause where the symptoms are acceptable to them. They do not have a degree or level of suffering that would make them go to the doctor. So they have a really good, excellent health lifestyle. They drink no alcohol. They don't smoke. They have a healthy weight. They have really good nutrition and they feel well. So they may not necessarily need to go on HRT. And currently we only use HRT for the prevention of osteoporosis. We can't really give women HRT now to say, oh, if they're over 50, oh, take this because that prevents you from having a heart attack later on. This is currently not the advice given. Mm-hmm. It is a nice side effect because we know women have low risk of cardiovascular disease if they started within 5 years after their menopause. But in terms of when a woman with DCIS, for example, with a previous history of that comes to me with no symptoms, then I would not necessarily advise her to go on HRT because we need to justify what we do.
Sure.
And in particular, it's particularly a tricky situation in women who actually had real breast cancer, where they had a lump, they had surgery, they had mastectomy, they had axillary clearance, maybe it has spread. They then went on to have chemotherapy, radiotherapy, and they had to use other chemicals like tamoxifen or aromatase inhibitors. And they are aromatase inhibitors in particularly, they suck every single molecule of estrogen out of your body. So you have the most horrific symptoms. And these are very exponentially worse symptoms, menopausal symptoms that these women experience, and they really suffer badly, but they cannot have HRT. So if you are on this sort of treatment, you need to find other ways of dealing with the symptoms. You cannot have estrogen because it defies the treatment. The purpose of the treatment is to remove estrogen from your body to subdue any cancer cells that may be left. And if you then add estrogen, it completely contradicts the treatment. It doesn't make any sense.
So what about, because that makes sense to me. Yes, of course, you're trying to completely drain
it's part of the breast cancer treatment.
But what about if you're really suffering with vaginal dryness and, you know, atrophy of the sphincter muscles, incontinence, because the Ovestin cream or the estriol products that we've got supposedly just treat that area and don't go to the bloodstream, would they be separate? It depends. Okay.
It depends on how long ago was the breast cancer, what treatment is she currently receiving. So if she has metastatic breast cancer and is really still on aromatase inhibitors, for example, you cannot use not even vaginal topical estrogen.
Not even vaginal.
Switch to tamoxifen, which is a different treatment that blocks the estrogen receptors, particularly in the breast. And a woman on tamoxifen can use topical vaginal estrogen, low dose vaginal estrogen, if she has really bad vaginal dryness. Some of these women can, if their symptoms are so bad that they literally are suicidal or they're feeling extremely unwell, some doctors will prescribe them HRT as well, but it is contraindicated. So we are prescribing against the license, we are prescribing against better kind of advice. But however, we do prescribe this in some women for the sake of quality of life. The problem we have is not the fact that we're doing something wrong and not wanting to help women. The problem is we do not have enough studies and clinical trials that give us a better idea of what women who are on tamoxifen, let's say, and at HRT, what their long-term prognosis is.
Sure,
so
I
this
guess
is
makes
the
big sense.
But vaginal topical estrogen,
yeah,
in most women who have finished their treatment, let's say you had breast cancer 10 years ago, you finished all your medical treatment, you're no longer on any drugs for your breast cancer, you've been in remission for 10 years, I cannot see any good reason why you cannot have topical vaginal estrogen. Every single woman can do that, and all other women on tamoxifen can have vaginal estrogen. But it's a systemic HRT where there are some restrictions where it is a little bit more complicated, depending on how long ago was your treatment, what medication are you still taking, how badly are you suffering. But there might be a woman 5 years post-treatment, post breast cancer, maybe she was 45, she had breast cancer, she is now in remission 5 years, and now she has menopausal symptoms because she's in her early 50s. And she no longer takes any active treatment for her cancer. So there is, in her case, she has to make this decision about what the risks are. And we just don't know what the risks are. There are some studies that show there's no increased risk in these women when they start HRT. Then there are some studies there is a risk of recurrence, or there is an increased risk of breast cancer in the other side of the breast that wasn't affected.
Right.
So yes, they will have an increased risk always, but if their quality of life is so poor and they have been in remission, they're closely monitored, they may be able to go on systemic HRT, but they can definitely have vaginal HRT.
Yeah,
no
but
doubt.
I guess it makes sense if you're on something that's inhibiting all your estrogen.
Yeah.
There's no point putting something else that's
precisely
putting
on estrogen. It's part of the treatment. Yeah.
But I mean, because I know for so many women, and that's talked about very much, the vaginal and pelvic issues that come once our estrogen starts to drop down. And actually, next, you know, we've got International Continence Week coming up, so I'm going to be doing a whole lot of tips from a physical and a nutrition point of view on how people can start to strengthen pelvic floor muscles, release tension patterns, and do bladder training if need be. But I really have found for lots of the people I know, using a bit of the topical,
absolutely
very low dose, as you said, estriol cream. Not just internally, but around
the
sphincter muscles.
Absolutely.
If you've had an episiotomy, if you've had a scar tissue from a severe tear, then it can be such comfort to use this, this cream.
Absolutely.
And it really does help the sphincters become a bit more plump and close.
I would say for the majority of women, for any woman who hasn't got, most women can absolutely use these forms of vaginal topical estrogen treatments without any increased risk of breast cancer. They do not go into the system. It's only the single exception is a woman who's currently receiving aromatase inhibitors specifically for treatment of current breast cancer. And we're not talking in remission of current breast cancer that you've just been diagnosed, you're still taking that medication every day. She should really not have this. This is the only exception. And this is not a common scenario, but every other woman with a history of breast cancer, having survived breast cancer in remission, any other woman who's never had breast cancer can safely and actually should almost consider taking topical treatments in the form of a ring. We have pessaries, we have the cream, we have a gel and a little tablet on a stick. There is something for every woman. Some women may find the cream messy, even though I quite like it. So they can try something else. You know, they do not have just go and see, try one treatment, see how it works. And you can even combine the two because there are two estrogens in these products. One is estriol, which is predominantly useful in the pelvic floor. And the other one is normal estradiol.
Yeah.
And there are different products containing different forms of estrogen. They're all body identical. So you can even combine, let's say, a estradiol pessary that you do twice a week, and then you can add your estriol cream, and they have an additive effect, and they work on different receptors. So these things can be combined, and then you can also add a good quality vaginal lubricant, for example, or moisturizer.
Yes, and that
you can use an emollient on the outside if you've got lichen sclerosis, particularly itchy, a barrier. Some women have to use a barrier cream, and then obviously cotton or natural fiber-based underwear.
Yes,
All of these things are helpful.
But actually, on that, when you mentioned the lubricants, there's some really nice, very natural. I know silk is a kiwi fruit extract, isn't it? So,
and you were like silk because
it's from New Zealand. I know, but you know, like you would put, you know, moisturizer around your eyes as we get older. Everything starts to just kind of drop a little bit. It's the same, the skin around the pelvic area. And if you think about it, if you have had an extended pushing phase when you delivered your baby, if you had an episiotomy, if you had a forceps delivery, if you had a severe tear, then your pelvic muscles, both the pelvic floor and deeper into the pelvic bowl, have been compromised. So once that estrogen starts to drop and the elasticity of the muscle fibers starts to go, it makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah.
That this area is going to just become less pliable, more uncomfortable. So to either literally put the estrogen back in a bit so that it becomes more supple, more elastic, more young, really, or if you can't use that or you don't want to use that, or plus using a lubricant, it's a moisturizer basically, but it's just a slippery thing. Can be really, 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 really beneficial. So I'm so glad you
And the important thing is that these products are safe to use long term, so there is no cutoff, age cutoff. Yes. It's really important that when, and also really important is that if you don't use it, you lose it. So I have women who make a start on that topical treatment. They think, oh yeah, it's all better. My bladder function is better. I'm not up at night 5 times. I go to the loo. I'm sleeping through the night. I'm having intercourse again without pain. And then they stop using it because they think it's better.
Yes.
But what happens is menopause is it forever?
It's well, your hormones have gone. They're not coming back. So
it's like using your moisturizer. So if you don't use it, you lose it. And it is annoying having to do something twice a week. But it's important to include this in your self-care protocol twice a week. Most of these products are twice a week. Depends on what you're using. But some are every day or some are, you can use them more than twice a week. So it is important not to be complacent and pay attention to that you are using them. Because if you stop using them, the same issue will reoccur. The thinning of the skin, nerve endings come to the surface, everything sort of the touch, skin becomes brittle, loses collagen and breaks. And then you have to start again. So consistency is key, keeping it part of your routine and not thinking that when you're better, oh, that's it. No, it is not as simple as, it's not a course. It's a treatment you carry on for the rest of your life. And there's no age when you have to stop it. Let's say you are 85 years old and you do not have sexual penetrative intercourse anymore. It doesn't matter. Even at that age, you will benefit because you will have fewer bladder infections. Probably you will have, which carry a big risk of septicemia in that age group. You'll have fewer irritation. You have, it carries on as you get older. So I never understand why doctors take women off these products when they are in a certain age. They say, why do you need this? Do you not have, you're not having sex, are you? It's not about sexual. So our vaginas are not vessels for male pleasure. Our vaginas are intricate, important organs.
And it's not just in the vagina, is it? No. It's around the whole pelvic area. It's around, you know, the same skin around the perineum and the anus and the urine, the whole shebang.
Need estrogen.
That's so important. I love that you've said that. Because, you know, if you think about it, we wouldn't just brush our teeth once a week and go, well, there we go. You'll feel disgusting once. Or you don't go to the gym once and go to one Pilates class and go, well, there I am, I'm fixed now. There are my muscles. And we don't do that. And so it is the same approach. And this is such, I always say that this is our most valuable real estate. It's the center of our body. It's so integral to what, you know, the people we are as females. And we just got to get over this whole shame thing about anything underneath the belly button is to be, you know, not talked about. And actually care about this part of ourselves. It's so important. I'm really glad you mentioned that. So
it's something that I do see, unfortunately, and I do remind my patients about this. It's important that if you you must carry on with this and not ignore it, and it will not go away. I mean, I see women who can't ride a bike, who can't do horse riding, who can't sit on, who need a special cushion on the office chair, which is, you know, you are aware of this every single minute of the day. So you need to do something about this and not ignore it. And there is very, very effective treatment. It is one, it's actually quite, you know, lovely to know that there is effective and safe long-term treatment out there, but you do have to use it and you have to pay attention. And that is the important part. That you do pay attention to that and be aware, not ignore it, because it will not go away by itself. It's not a temporary thing. Once you're menopausal, it happens literally to 90 to 100% of women, I would say.
Regardless, did you hear that, guys? So 90 to 100%. So basically all of us. So, and actually, I was going to say, Mandy, I talked to a urogynecologist a couple of years ago when I was really going through all of this before I met you. And she said to me that she wished all women at around 42, 43 would just start using a topical low dose estrogen cream or pessary, so that they then didn't have the she wouldn't see the prevalence of prolapsed organs so much, or like you said, recurrent UTIs, thrush even. And I was like, but I was a woman's health specialist, I didn't even know about it. So how does everybody else know about it? So the more guys, the more, tell your friends, use it yourself, tell your friends. We do not need to be suffering. And the big thing that I think is important is to, even if you can't take HRT, don't want to take HRT, topical hormone therapy, it is a hormone therapy because it is a hormone, it's not systemic. So it's not,
no,
it's that's,
it you won't do anything for anything else. So yeah. It is really, so you can combine the two. So a woman who wants to take systemic HRT can also add topical treatments or just localized treatment as well, if she feels that the systemic HRT, so the tablet or the gel, is not enough to treat the symptoms. You can add systemic HRT, but the other way around, you can also decide, if you do not go on systemic HRT, you can just use topical vaginal treatments on its own long-term safely. It does not get absorbed. It's a tiny, tiny bit of absorption into the bloodstream. Now, it only works locally. It only works around the bladder or the pelvic floor and the vaginal tissue. So the big downside, I would say, is that it will not treat your flushes. It will not treat your sleep. It will not do anything else. But on the other hand, the plus that it is very, very safe to use long term.
But a lot of GPs even for those don't know that. And they're like, oh, because it's categorized in the.
Yeah, and don't read the leaflet. The leaflets are super misleading.
Yes.
The leaflets will legally cover all aspects of this molecule that it contains that has ever been done. So they will say in the leaflet, you can't use it when you have breast cancer. You can't do this or that. Do not read the leaflet of the topical treatments. Mm. It's really misleading. And I have women bringing me up alarmed to say, oh, look, I've got a blood clot issue. It says I can't have estrogen in the leaflet, do not use. And
yeah,
but they are very behind. The problem is the money of the pharmaceutical companies. It costs them a lot of money to devise a new leaflet, and they're just not interested in giving up-to-date evidence. But I know that the British Menopause Society and many other professors have asked them to update the leaflets
to
a more modern approach.
It is, but
it's a long process.
That's so crazy.
My advice would be, whilst I always encourage women to be informed, in this case, do not get upset or read the leaflet because it is very misleading. It is actually based on systemic HRT rather than
the use. Which means it's based on, the leaflet is based on the stuff that you either take orally or go into your body transdermally. It's not based on the fact that the stuff you put around the vagina, around the vulva, is unbelievably low dose. So a whole year's worth is like
one oral tablet.
Which is extraordinary. And just so that you know, I now do estrogel, which is a transdermal estrogen. So that's estradiol. So I have got that systemically in my body. But I find that at certain times of the month, and not every month, but sometimes I can tell that my estrogen is lower, and I find that I get a bit drier down below, a bit more uncomfortable, and I do then use silk just to for lubrication, and I use a bit of the Ovestin cream, so just around the urethra just to help. You know, sometimes I get a little bit of urgency, and much better these days because I'm doing all of my stuff, but I find just every now and again a bit more more externally actually than internally, because I just find that it helps for about a week, and then it just settles down and the systemic stuff is enough.
That's so cool. You can do it that way if you're not completely menopausal, or if your symptoms aren't throughout the month severely going through every single day of the month. You can use a cyclical approach like you do, and because you're also topping it up through the skin, so it will, some of it will get with the bloodstream to the vaginal area. If you have a menstrual cycle still naturally, despite with being on HRT, you can have a menstrual cycle, and then there's a particular time of the month, which is the week before your period, where estrogen in particularly drops. So that may be the time where you personally top it up. But other women who no longer have a menstrual cycle, who are actually menopausal, for them, the advice would be to use it continuously throughout the month, because their hormone levels will be low throughout the month.
Yes.
That's the difference.
But I did find, so when I, before I'd even started on HRT, or just when I started, that's when I also needed the topical Ovestin cream. And then once the HRT started being in my bloodstream, so it took me 3 or 4 months actually before the estrogen started to really take effect, then I didn't need it at all. I was absolutely fine. But now, 2 years, how many years on? 2 years? A year and a half on for me? Year and a half maybe. And I'm 50 this year, and I can tell that because my periods are much more all over the place. Now, in the last 3-4 months, I've started to need it again. And I know this because I can feel it, that my natural estrogen is dropping even more.
And that is a good, I think, a good finishing message as well, because you're going through a change, a journey where your hormone levels change, you have to adjust treatment as you go along. There is no one fits all where you put every single woman on the same thing at the same time of her life, or the same year, or the same age. It doesn't work like that. Every woman needs to be assessed. We need to look at where she is in with her hormonal status at that time. Is she menopausal? Is she perimenopausal? Is she still having periods? And then that pretty much decides what treatment she goes on to. But that doesn't mean that that treatment at the time when she starts it will be the forever treatment. She will need to adjust it as she goes on. And once you are menopausal, let's say you're in your late 50s and you've been on whatever treatment you have been and it's been stable, then you would be expected to probably carry on with this without making further changes. But whilst you're in the perimenopause and not quite menopausal, and in those transitional years, you will need to adjust your treatment and reassess as you go along. It is not, remember, it's a phase that of change. So you need to also respond to that with your treatment. And that means checking on your symptoms. If they change, the treatment might not be working. So then you adjust at what you do. And that applies to the pelvic treatment as well. Some women need more, some women need less. And you just, as you go along, you adjust your treatment to your needs.
And actually,
there's lots of flexibility involved in this.
Yes, I was going to say that's how yoga, I feel, from my point of view, the more we know ourselves, and yoga is brilliant for actually being able to sit in your body. It's Swadhyaya is called, where you observe what's going on in your body. And it's not, you take away all the stories and the head, you're just observing what's going on at this moment in time, and you're recognizing that things are constantly changing.
It's a flow.
Yeah. So in that way, knowing your body, feeling when you might need, you know, like my natural estrogen is dropping right off now, and I know that I'm heading right into, I think I'm going to probably stop bleeding in the next short while. I can tell because I tune into my body so much. So now, in order to make me feel okay, I might need a bit more estrogen at the moment. Once I've actually gone through menopause itself and my hormone levels are lower, but then naturally start to become a little bit more even, I might just drop down and not need quite so much estrogen again.
That's correct.
Well, listen, thank you so much. It's always fascinating talking to you. I love hearing your wisdom. So thank you so much on behalf of all of the women's wellbeing ladies who will be listening to this. Dr. Mandy is a busy woman. However, she's very passionate about helping individuals, just like I am. And so please do, all of her contact details are in the therapist tent. And if you need to get in touch with her and make an appointment, then please do.
But I may need to mention that I can't take on new patients until probably September, October now. I just want to mention this, if you are desperate, then I currently can't take on anyone new, but I'm hoping that I will be able to take
in time.
Yes. Thank you, Linda.
She's a much needed, much wanted woman. All right, guys, thank you very much for listening, and take care. We will see you again at some point.